We're going to get right to it. Samir, you got a question, I can tell. Introduce yourself, by the way.
How's it going, everybody? Samir. Dave's been mentoring me for maybe 4 or 5 years now. I lost track.
Half his life.
Born and raised from Chicago. Currently running a family office. We work with entrepreneurs and high net worth individuals with taxes, investments, alternative investments just across the board. And happy to just be here supporting you.
Thank you. And question?
Yeah, so I guess the question that I always ask you this, but I always try to reframe it because I'm sure it can change from year to year. Question for you, when you go back in your life and you go back to the situation with the bankruptcy, prior to that, I feel like when you're at that peak, it's an interesting situation because you're in a place in your life where you have everything. It just seems perfect on the spectrum. And I feel like when you go through a dramatic loss like that, some of the purpose that you have, you might tie your worth to that, at least I would. And so I'm curious for you, what were the steps that you took after going bankrupt to say, hey, I'm not going to tie my worth to this. I'm going to tie something bigger than me.
So the actuality of losing everything was different for me than most people because I started my transformation 2 years before I lost everything. My wife knew I was going to lose everything, including my life, if I didn't change who I was 2 years before I actually lost financially everything. And so one of the things to understand is what is significant or what's going to be the catalyst to shift your paradigm. And when I shifted the paradigm that I didn't have everything, but I had everything I needed to get to where I wanted to be or better. So that's what happened when my wife gave me an ultimatum. I will tell you one of the genius things at that time, Samir, which was so important about my wife to me, is that many wives, when your husbands, by the way, if you're a wife, when your husbands screw up massively, which they absolutely will, because it's part of being a male in human nature. So when you're hitting yourself going, what am I doing with this idiot? You can't change somebody, but you can understand them. And so my wife, instead of telling me, I'm leaving if you drink again or do drugs again, or if I see you out at a strip club again, I'm gonna leave you. And we do this with our kids, right? You do this again, you're gonna be punished. She didn't say that to me. When I begged her to give me a chance to change, because I wanted to change, which was the first question she asked, I don't want you to change unless you want to change, because you're not going to change unless you want to change. I said, I want to change. I don't want you to change because of me, because you want me to stay. No, I want to be the person that you want to stay with. And then she said, here's the deal. As long as you try. As long as I know you're trying, she said, I've known you since the fourth grade. And if you give 100% towards this, there's no doubt that everything's going to be okay. But if you're bullshitting me, lying to me, telling me one thing and doing another, and anyone in here a coach, what's the most frustrating thing is when someone you're coaching that you want it more than they want it for themselves and they're not willing to do the work. So I concentrated, Samir, and I still do today, on my behaviors. And I do my best. I learn lessons and have fun in those behaviors. I define the behaviors. Good behaviors align with where I want to be or better. Bad behaviors interfere with where I want to be or better. It's that simple. And I'm taking inventory of my negotiable and non-negotiables, my repetitive and non-repetitive behaviors. And remember this, my good behaviors are not yours. And my bad behaviors are not yours. They're defined by where you want to be. Not where somebody else wants to be or is or missing. And that's really important because I know a lot of my behaviors. And as a coach, this is really important because I was under the mindset early on in my coaching career. You got to wake up at 4 a.m. like Dave Meltzer and like obsess on time and productivity. That's bullshit. You do not have to wake up at 4 a.m., especially nowadays, to be successful. But you do need to have the behaviors that are aligned with where you want to be or better and figure out the ones that are interfering with it. And work around people that are going to support you in doing your best, learning lessons, and having fun. And it's amazing where life takes you to a point where I could handle losing everything. That was a lot easier than the 2 years previous. Thank you. Next question. All right. Yes. Introduce yourself.
Hi, David. It's Nancy Spano. I'm an author and a speaker. When you were speaking about that time in your life when you were going outside and you were saying to your wife, look at everything we have, look at our beautiful home, look at this, look at that. I experienced a stroke in 2019, and some people in here know about it, some don't.
Now everyone does in here.
One thing that kept bringing up for me was perspective. And my mother said to me, the right side of your body was paralyzed. You were having a seizure. Why did you play victim? You didn't know if you were going to be paralyzed for the rest of your life. And I said, you know why, Mom? Because it changed my perspective. And my stroke for me was not the end, it was just the beginning. And when you were speaking about that moment when you lost everything, because you changed your perspective, that was not the end for you, that was also just the beginning.
Absolutely. And I think the saying, you give meaning to everything you see, and that's why my relationship with circumstance is so important, because I know that the uncertainty of circumstance is guaranteed. Outside of me, everything is uncertain. It's circumstantial. And so according to circumstances, I have to be able to give the meaning of my past and align it with the circumstances of the day and my divine direction of where I want to be or better. Knowing I can only think about where I want to be, I really don't know where. Because I don't know if COVID's going to hit again, or if I don't know if my mom's going to die, or I don't know what's going to happen tomorrow. And so in order to hedge my bet in these circumstances, like having a stroke, I have to have non-negotiable behavior. So if I, you know, had a situation like that, I still could spend the next day after my stroke, a minimum of 7 hours sleeping, a minimum of an hour on my health, a minimum amount of time with my family, a minimum amount of time with my faith, a minimum amount of time on my finance, a minimum amount of time studying relativity and perspective, and a minimum amount of time studying how I should be using my time according to the circumstances of the day. So none of you could name a circumstance that would happen that could change my non-negotiable behavior other than if I died, meaning my time was up. So think about that. If you don't consciously have an intentional relationship with circumstance, by having non-negotiables, which provide exponentiality in your life, then start thinking about it at the very least, and your life will expand exponentially and accelerate at a pace that is unbelievable, which satisfies human nature, right? Because we're instant gratification people, and that's what stops people from having commitment. Perfect. And thank God you're healed, by the way. Thank you. There you go. All right, next, Big B.
Thank you. So, Dave, who motivates the motivator? Who inspires the guy inspiring? Who do you go to? Who do you go to when you need that inspiration, when you need to be inspired? Who is your go-to? Do you have go-to people?
This is a great question because I know someone mentioned on the panel, you're the aggregate of the five people you spend the most time with. I think that's bullshit. Think about your moms out there. They're spending the majority of their time with a three-year-old. They're not the aggregate of a three-year-old. That's not true. So to this end, I believe in teams. Maybe it comes from my sports background. I believe that teams should be based on subject matter topics and expertise that are important to you, and that you should find a team for every subject matter topic and expertise that's important to you. And on that team, you should decide what position you want to play today and what position you want to play in the future. And in the context of that, you are now going to be, according to what's most important to you, subject matter, topics, and expertise, you're going to have the aggregate of what they were trying to explain to you of the energy that you surround yourself with. So if in my family, I want to be the owner of my team. But in AI, for example, I'm a point guard maybe, or a ball boy maybe, whatever it may be, but I want to be a coach or an owner someday. And so each of these teams represent the neighborhood that I'm creating, like this one, which is a frequency of people that want to help each other and know people that help each other by subject matter, topic, and expertise. So I've actually transformed what used to be just a smaller coaching group to thousands of people in a private networking group where I give one-on-one access. I still coach. I make introductions for everybody in the group, but the group itself is providing a profitability for everyone else by that idea that, look, we have so many people in here. Pick your team within our neighborhood and the position you want to play, and then we reach the greatest way to get to where you want to be, which is ask for help and help someone else. It's that simple. Sean talked about it, right? Just find someone on that team that can help you get to that position and help someone get to your position to fill that seat.
Good afternoon.
Introduce yourself just in case one person doesn't know you.
I'm Rear Admiral Gary Hall, world-famous helicopter pilot, adventurous sportsman, world traveler. I'm perhaps the finest helicopter pilot I know, call sign Viper. So,
And half comedian, unbelievable sense of humor.
So, David, when I was age 27, I read Napoleon Hill, Think and Grow Rich, and it changed my life. I parallel you. I didn't make $100 million and lose it, but I made myself famous in the Navy through those principles. And I, too, you know the rubber band around asparagus or something? There might be a little notch in it, and you stretch it, it's going to break. That's what I did with my marriage. So you did that with your marriage. I did that with my marriage. Can you talk about the power of a strong marriage and talk a little bit about a marriage? Because I didn't make millions of dollars, but I made myself the best naval aviator I could based on those principles. Also, has Think and Grow Rich been updated to remove references to O.J. Simpson and a few things like that? And if those of you who have read it, it was updated, I think, in the 80s, and I don't know if it's been updated.
Yeah, it'll be continued.
So the question is, talk about the importance of marriage, the importance of your spouse in saving us men. Men are going to be men. We're going to do stupid stuff. Women are going to be smart. And tell us what to do the right stuff. So,
and hopefully be forgiving, right? So my grandfather told me there's three things you need in life to be fulfilled, passionate, purposeful, and profitable. Number one, find a liaison to your life, which is going to be your spouse, your intimate partner. They're going to be the liaison between you and your kids, your family, your relatives, your friends, everyone around you. Your intimate partner is that conduit. And you only need one person like that in your life. Two, learn to love what you do. You spend a third of your life with your family. That's why your spouse is so important and your friends. Two, you spend a third of your life in activity you get paid for. Make sure that you can learn to love what you're doing every day, that activity. And then he said, buy the best bed you can find. Spend a third of your life sleeping and stooping. Some of you may know what that means. So make sure you have the best bed you can find. But he was saying sleep well. My marriage to me is everything because my wife's my rock. And I was explaining to Rhett, who'll be up in a couple minutes, I wasn't anticipating two things when my mom died. One was how much it was going to hurt because I was ready for it. My dad had passed, my mom was in hospice. I got to say goodbye. I thought, man, I'm Dave Meltzer. I got this handled. You know, I'm going to stop, drop, and roll this one. I'll be back on track. And my heart was broken. Still is. But the one thing I also didn't anticipate was how much of a rock my wife is for me. And also that I am for her. And so I didn't anticipate because my wife's mom died at 25 and I got married at 29 that my mom was her mom. And that is, I can see why marriages have difficulties in these type of times, especially if it maybe involves a child, because I wasn't anticipating that I needed her and she wasn't going to be available like she normally is and vice versa. And I put my wife into everything and into that measure because we are idiots. It's genetically inherited, and testosterone doesn't help. Just look for what you want in your spouse. People ask me, because I have an amazing marriage, and I have an amazing wife, but it wasn't an amazing marriage, and she wasn't an amazing wife until I looked for my amazing wife in my wife and to have an amazing marriage with my wife. So instead of coming home late going, oh shit, I'm in so much trouble, she's gonna be such a B word, I always say, gosh, I'm late. I'm so blessed that my wife appreciates why I'm late and is gonna be forgiving and understanding and loving for the reasons that I'm late. And guess what? That's exactly what I get. And I find most marriages, if we look for what we want in a marriage, an amazing spouse, we get amazing spouse. If you're looking for a B word, you'll get a B word. So great question, thank you. And thank you, Grow Rich, by the way. It's constantly updated, different forages, different renditions, and we're constantly going to be utilizing Think and Grow Rich for today. But one of the books that is less known, if you're a Napoleon Hill fan at all, I highly suggest, audio or written, Outwitting the Devil. Outwitting the Devil is the bomb. Most of the people within the Institute and the Foundation, they like Outwitting the Devil way better than Think and Grow. Not that Think and Grow Rich isn't great, but Outwitting the Devil is channeled from God. It was written in 1937, and he's talking about shit that we didn't even think about today.
My name is Rajai Kalani. I'm a quantum energy healer, and I work with energy, and I help people heal. So my question to you is, how does spirituality enrich your life, and how does it kind of give you a ground from where you could be a better person and really be the best person you can be?
That's so good. Spirituality is my life. I'm in a human experience of spirituality. In spirit is how I live. In an infinite, abundant, unified system that's infinite in itself. I'm getting better and better at reconciling the human experience within the context of the infinite, the spiritual. And so for me to understand energy itself, and I'm a quantum healer as well and study under Dr. and Master Shaw, and I understand, I trace calligraphies that aren't even here to have quantum energy of infinite nature. But that doesn't work here. It works everywhere, and it works in all times. And I love movies now because they're giving people help on understanding time, multiverse, quantum. It's really allowing people to get a concept that they can utilize in their human experience to pick and choose what experience that they want to have in the intimate, because you're going to get to pick and choose tons of them. But we just, no matter how hard you try, including me, I don't think we'll ever understand infinite. And it stems from when you were little and you're just like, oh yeah, infinite plus one. That still confuses the shit out of me. Right? Kind of like I am. When I was in 11th grade in AP English, I'm like, oh yeah, I am. I get it. Now I spent, 50 some years trying to figure out I am. And there's like so many texts and geniuses trying to figure it out in a quantum realm. So I prefer Wayne Dyer, right? I am a spiritual being having a human experience. And when we look at this as a human experience, it's a lot more fun and you have a lot more power because you definitely can give meaning to the human experience. All right, last question.
Hi everyone, I'm Alyssa. I work chartered sales in private aviation. And my question for you is, I know we just touched base on spirituality, but in your journey, how have you seen faith play a role in overcoming personal and professional challenges? And how do you integrate this faith into your coaching to inspire and guide others? I know you believe in God, but how is it that you...
Yeah.
You know,
it's the most important thing to me, and it's the most surprising thing, even through my mom's death and all the religious things, because my family's very Jewish, it's still surprising to me. My old rabbi was there who raised me, and I was saying, you know, because my brothers are like a rabbi's wet dream, because one is a famous rabbi, and the other's like wanted to be a rabbi, and like is so religiously, right? And I was like, I'm the opposite. I'm like outwitting the devil. I literally threatened the rabbi at my bar mitzvah that I was going to leave the stage. I'm serious. And so when I told him that everything I do is faith-based today and that I respect the dogmatic religions and utilize them because I can define them simply, wisdom is extremely important, but it's worthless without faith. And faith to me is simple, and apply it to your religion, philosophy, spirituality, or theories, but no one's ever been able to beat my best option faith. And please tell me if you can do this, but whatever you define it as and whatever religion, dogmatic rules and principles you like to follow that enhances your faith, I love that. Jesus, I love Jesus. Someone came up to me, Dave, do you believe in Jesus? I knew you grew up Jewish. I was like, is Jesus bigger than me, omniscient, all-powerful, and loves me more than my mom? And he's, yeah. I'm like, okay, cool. I'm down with Jesus. Think about it. How important is it to believe in something bigger than you that's omniscient and all-powerful and loves you more than your mom? Protects you, promotes you, and perfects you, even when you don't understand it, even when there's no evidence, even when the evidence is contrary to the actions and perceptions and intentions that you have. Imagine what life would be with no faith. I had faith, but like my mom said, I had faith in the wrong thing. I had faith in myself and the faith in money that I was able to make by myself. That's nothing. I try my best to inspire you in whatever vernacular, vocabulary resonates with you, to have faith in something bigger than you that's omniscient and all-powerful, loves you more than your mom, and you will be protected, promoted, loved, and perfected at all times, even when there's no evidence, even when everybody else tells you you're not. It will not matter. I promise you, every detour in your life becomes divine in that divine direction. And most importantly, to reconcile in real life, time becomes divine as well. And so now you have infinite patience, which is a skill set that will guarantee your happiness. So bless you.